And now we're starting.
Work it out. In fact, work out those cheeks.
Yeah. Warm up.
It's time to talk about serious shit, like the terrible battle between fucking Hassan Piker and what's his name?
That's Ethan right. Klein. We're going to be talking about the debate, the Ethan Klein Hassan Piker debate,
which I
did not watch. You did, and some other friends of mine did, and you all have the same consensus, which is, this is so fucking depressing.
Yeah, this sucks. We hate this.
We also have some other stuff we're going to talk about. Some stuff I want to talk about. But before we kick that off, I got to say,
he does not want to talk about the other thing.
No. Well, we'll get into that in a second. But before we do, hey, Propagandos, it is Tuesday, May 6th.
Tuesday.
8:13 p.m. Central Standard Time. Our longitude latitude coordinates are
as follows. Breaker, Niner, Bravo.
But yeah, the things that I wanted to touch on, I read the New York Mag Intelligencer piece on old John Fetterman, Senator Fetterman.
Oh boy, his brain is not working.
Man,
it's not been working for some time, apparently.
I'll say this, I wish I hadn't read the article. Because
really?
because now I have sympathy for him. And before I was like, it was so much easier to just like make fun of this guy that I only see being an asshole online. And now the article does a very good job of painting a portrait of just like a very mentally ill man that's like not all there. And he, you know, it's really scary to not be all there and then suddenly realize you're not all there, right? Like when you're in the throes of like a high, you're not really feeling it. And the moment you realize, oh shit, I'm like out of control right now. I'm losing.
Do you think
it right
he
now.
Realizes it?
There are
he must on some level, probably.
Yes. There are certain parts in the article that really show that like he recognizes what's going on in this moment. I mean, I just talked to my dad about when my Nana was dying of Alzheimer's, about how, you know, there were moments where she was just like, I really think I'm losing my mind. I need help. And then, you know, that was counteracted with her being belligerent and refusing to go to the doctors or
all the bad stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not to be grim, but like, she's right. You are. That's what happens to you when you have fucking dementia, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's brutal. It's not good.
No. And Fetterman does not have dementia, but he is very clearly a stroke victim in recovery who is not doing the proper recovery, and therefore he's not recovering.
I mean, he's being enabled by a bunch of people that are like, that probably would not be doing this if he wasn't a fucking senator, right? Like, you know what I mean?
Well,
it's his staff or his family, like, yeah.
You should read the article because a lot of it is about his staff, like, taking steps to make sure he doesn't do these things in ways that they're not enabling him, such as not letting him have his Twitter password. And his wife Giselle, like, they're contacting Giselle, they're contacting his doctors, and it's really messy and sloppy, and it makes me sad. He has alienated himself from like damn near everyone in the Democratic Party, either through fault of his own or by no fault of his own. Just like, you know, he's a bit of a firebrand within the party. He's not afraid to shove the middle finger to the establishment, but
yeah, he's a Fox News Democrat. I mean, they're not exactly very popular right now.
Yeah. And so, you know, he's making strange bedfellows with people on the right. He refuses to switch parties. He refuses to run as an independent. So he's not doing the Kristen Sinema route. But he's also, there's like one or two instances in the article that's just like really sad because there are people who are really eager to work with him and he's just not all there.
Again, I'd be sadder for him if he wasn't a fucking senator, right? Yeah. Like, it's hard for me to feel sympathy for people that are basically in a position of enormous power in the world, right? And it's like, you know, I feel for the guy. He's basically, as far as I can tell from the snippets of the article that I read, he's basically a fucking, like, invalid, right? Like, this is a guy that probably needs caretakers, and he gets to vote in the Senate. He gets to confirm, you know, Pete Hegseth.
He voted no on Pete Hegseth.
He
was
could
torn
have if he wanted.
He
right?
was torn yeah, he was over torn. It. That right article here, does the article does talk about the emotional toll it took on him about confirming Pete Hegseth.
Boo hoo.
And his arguments were very like shoddy, and even his staff was like, that's not a good argument, man. Like, you're going to piss off your entire staff if you do this.
If he was just even a regular shitty senator, I would definitely, I'd probably feel something, right? But not the way he is, man.
Yeah.
Like, you can only be evil about so many things and still get, you know, not props from me, but like a pass, right? Yeah.
Well, one thing that's in the article, and the people who the reporters who have asked him about it in this week, he keeps saying, oh, this is an anonymous source. It's a single source. Everyone's hiding behind these anonymous sources. These are just disgruntled employees that don't work for me anymore. But this article does make the case that his current staffers are willing to speak out anonymously, of course, based on the absolutely vile things that he has said about Arabs, Muslims, Palestinians.
Yeah, just the kill them all stuff is just fucking wild. I mean, when this dude is, you know, is like on par with like Ben Gavir in terms of like how fucking noxious the shit that comes out of his mouth is, right? Like, I mean, and by the way, that's not a thing that precludes you from being a politician in the United States, right? But, yeah. But you know, being a progressive in 2025, that's going to be rough for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Which he, to Fetterman's credit, in 2022, he was, you know, unabashedly defending Israel, saying like, I'm not a progressive when it comes to Israel. He has a longstanding history of supporting Israel, unlike, you know, say Maxwell Frost, who was very pro-Palestine until he took a meeting with AIPAC, and let's just say he saw dollar signs in his eyes. Mm-hmm. And that's a tale as old as time. So his staff knew what they were signing up for, but they didn't know that October 7th was going to happen. And they've been shocked and appalled by his behavior since then. And the article does say that his wife is shocked and appalled by the stuff he said since then.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I should put myself in that camp too, right? Like, I remember being, you know, hearing that Dr. Oz was basically running, and like looking at him and being pretty excited for some short amount of time that there's like this, you know, kind of blue collar populist a guy running from Pennsylvania, and it's like, okay. I mean, I don't like his shit about, you know, how big behind fracking he is, which is, I think, by the way, I think it doesn't get a lot of credit anymore. I don't think a lot of people are really interested in analyzing how much of his rise to power was just from the oil and gas lobby. But we should have known then. I mean, I should have known, right? And it should have been.
Yeah. But I mean, this is pretty common around the country, but your progressive darling or whatever your hero is, the people locally have something else to say about these.
Yeah,
people.
Definitely. It's like, it's way more complicated than the tagline ever lets on.
Your alternative weeklies in Braddock, I don't think there are any, but say in Pennsylvania, they've been tracking Fetterman's not so progressive agenda for years. What's interesting to me is I heard this on the podcast Trillbillies, which is so, so awesome. And if you if any of the Trillbillies hosts are on, please join our Discord. They had a episode about Dolly Parton's theme park, and the locals despise Dolly Parton, which is so funny to me. There are many locals in Dollyland that just say like, she does not really give back to our community. It's all this really meticulously crafted PR campaign. After all, there is a part of Dollyland that's like, what if the Confederacy never ended and all the slaves were happy? Which
still really stuck in that like 1970s, 1980s a kind of genre aesthetic of like rebel shit. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that does not fly nowadays, right? No. Like, that is, you know.
Well, actually, Alec, you'd be surprised to learn that it is back.
Yeah. Maybe it flies all too well.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't be surprised that people are kind of off-put by it, right?
Of course. That's all I wanted to say about that. And then I did want to bring up something that, Alec, I think that you can speak on as well as celebrate a little bit. But did you hear the news? A truce was signed with the Houthis, my good boy.
Oh, boy. I hope it lasts. Between who?
The United States and the Houthis. They signed a truce. This was reported by Ryan Graham of Dropsite News. The article made me laugh a little bit because they multiple times say it appears that the truce was brought about thanks to a Dropsite News article that we had totally written. Like, all right.
Give a pat on the back.
Yeah, maybe. One thing that Dropsite does that like not a lot of other people are doing is that they're following their journalistic duty by we are interviewing, you know, the appointed leader of Hamas. We are interviewing the leader of the Houthis. Things that typically journalists do not do. Yeah, I think it's pretty admirable that they're going out there and talking to people that most mainstream media outlets would never even dream of talking to.
Yeah, it's cool. They're doing real life journalism in a space that, you know, I mean, I know we've talked about some of it, but we're not exactly journalists, you and I, Connor. Like, we would, you know, like it if that space was more full with the kinds of people that have the money to do, you know, serious reporting, right? Not saying that Dropsite doesn't do serious reporting. You know what I mean?
And they got $5 a month from me, my man.
Yeah. All of our $5 a month, and we could send one guy to Yemen.
For $5 a month, you too.
I can't go to Yemen. I'm an analyst.
I mean, you've, on this podcast before, have cheered for the Houthis, and you've been following this war a bit more closely than I have. So what is it? Is this... Because the Houthis basically said, like, we will stop bombing U.S. American or U.S. ships if you stop bombing us. And Trump says, OK, but is this because I've seen reports on Twitter, X, the everything app, that the Houthis have been keeping a tally of like American drones that they're shooting down. So are the Houthis winning? And so the U.S. is capitulating to them, or is this just like, is Trump actually getting frustrated with Netanyahu's behavior? And he's like, I'm sick of you. I'm going to do this. Because Israel was left out of the treaty talks, and they are very upset right now.
You know, that's their prerogative, I'd say, right there. Whatever talks there are going to be with the Houthis, whatever's not, you know, continually bombing them or whatever forever, is basically going to piss them off. That is, you know, let's be honest, that's their national interest, right? You could say. But I don't know. I mean, the question is whether or not this will last, right? This is kind of breaking news, so even I haven't been able to dive like too deeply into it. But time will tell, right? I mean, the thing that sets the Houthis off, that they've swore up and down is the reason that they're doing it, and I tend to believe them, right, is not stopping. And in fact, it's probably going to get worse, right? So, you know, the starvation and destruction of fucking Gaza. So I don't know. I mean, they could fire back at any moment, right? I mean, they was mostly focused on shipping. My understanding is that the ceasefire mostly has to do with them shooting missiles at Israel, right? And you know, I don't know whether or not that's been effective. It hasn't been effective in the sense of stopping it, but it has been effective in the way that it's drawn some kind of ire, right, in the world. And it's also been effective, let's be honest, right, as a propagandizing tool for the Houthis, right, in a moment where, you know, geopolitically, regionally, right, in the Middle East, it seems like all of the actors that are kind of, you know, in the quote unquote resistance to Israel or whatever, right, but outside of the American and Israeli camp, in a moment where they've basically all either, you know, failed to generate enough pressure on Israel to stop them or been defeated in like the case of Hezbollah, for instance, right, or the Syrians altogether. You know, the Houthis are scoring some very serious and, you know, relatively inexpensive in money terms, expensive in, you know, people terms. I mean, their people are getting fucking bombed, right? You know, points in that area, right? And this is a people that was not popular, you know, was not popular enough for people even in the region to really give a fuck that they were being killed and starved by, you know, the UAE and the Saudis and the Americans 10 years ago. Right. And now everybody knows their names, and a lot of people have some kind of positive, you know, association with them. And yeah. And that's to if you want to be cold blooded about it. Right. Like that's one of the benefits of getting this right. In addition to, you know, expressing some kind of moral outrage that people regionally and globally feel. Right. Myself as well.
It could be. I mean, I wanted to float this by you again. Your war knowledge is more extensive than mine. But is this Trump trying to eke out a win? Because let's look at Ukraine and Russia. No end in sight. Trump was caught. It wasn't a hot mic moment. He said this while talking to a reporter that he was just
not
like,
exactly a hot mic moment.
Right? Yeah, it's just like both. He's been frustrated with both Netanyahu and Putin for like, you said you weren't going to do this. Why are you doing this?
Yeah, it's just like totally misunderstanding, right? The relationship and then being like, what? It's just very funny.
It's just so funny for Trump to realize like, well, geez, if this doesn't work, should we do sanctions on Russia, I guess? And then with Netanyahu, I think Trump really did think like, oh, he'll listen to me. It's like, no, dude, you listen to him.
We're buddies, right? Well, I mean, I don't know what kind of relationship they have, but I think and to be honest, I don't know how much pressure, right, Trump has put on, you know, the Israelis. They came right. in swinging. They came in talking tough. And, you know, now it's not as tough as, you know, many had previously thought.
Right.
Right. They forced a ceasefire earlier and then.
Oh, no, I was going to say Netanyahu seems to love having an old, you know, just what's the fucking word? This is why we can't do late night.
I was going to say bar buddy.
Well, not bar buddy, but just like he loves having a president he can run circles around. And let's face it, if you've been watching Trump's live moments, the man's starting to sundown, and it's kind of weird.
Yeah, he sounds like shit. I don't know why.
If it's not everything computer, then it's what you say? Well, I was going to be a movie maker, and then. When he was talking about why did you reopen Alcatraz?
Supposed to be a movie maker was wild. I don't know what's going on in that man's brain, but I have an given our past presidents, I have an inkling of what's going on, and it's not good, folks.
Alzheimer's, there is evidence saying that Alzheimer's can be contagious. So maybe
they left it in the Oval Office.
Yeah, maybe Biden's last thing, everyone like put him, dragged him around on a leash, and they're like, sneeze here, Mr. President.
Jesus. That's awesome. Look, I thought America elected a president that didn't have dementia this time. What the fuck?
Yeah, just Biden calling him now. Like, hey there, Jack. Not so easy, is it?
Not so easy. Not
sometimes,
so easy.
Sometimes
your
you
brain
get
doesn't
the,
work.
Sometimes you get the bear. Sometimes the bear gets into your stuff and rattles the garbage cans around.
What was I saying?
Anyway,
I don't know.
And another thing.
Anyway, another thing. Just walks off, hangs up the phone.
Doesn't even hang up the phone, just puts the phone down. Yeah,
puts
like,
it down
away.
On the table.
Joe, are you there?
Oh, man.
Joe? I can't hear you, Joe.
Hello? He's gone. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be back to the Houthis. back to war and a possible ceasefire. I don't know what it means. I don't know if it's going to last. Right. There's a million different reasons why this could happen. It could be the Navy screaming, as they have been for several months, that we're shooting all of our missiles at the Houthis, and it doesn't seem to be doing anything. And we bought those missiles so that we could shoot Chinese vessels, you know, out of the sea, or I guess bomb factories over there.
We were supposed to use these missiles to shoot down Chinese balloons, sir.
Every time you or somebody else reminds me about the balloon gate or whatever the fuck, I'm just like, Jesus, man, that seems unreal now. Do you know what I mean?
For me, for some context, I used to have a show on Twitch that was weekly, Monday night, weekly, and we had to do it no matter what. And usually what that meant was Monday at 5, like, what the fuck are we talking about on the show?
Oh, way different than this show, by the way.
Yeah. And we talk at noon today.
That's correct. Sometimes days in advance, folks.
But man, when that Chinese balloon went down, we were like, hell yeah, we got an hour's worth of material on this, baby. But I also ask about the Trump trying to eke out a win, because a couple of things are happening this weekend. One is Trump is, I believe, meeting with some Saudi officials, trying to get some arms or some arms trade deals going on. But he's also really trying to get Saudi Arabia to go along with the Abraham Accords. And I did not realize this, but Saudi Arabia said, we're not doing this unless they pass the statehood for Palestine is in place.
Yeah,
they won't normalize relations with Israel until that happens.
People have speculated that this is, you know, I mean, I don't want to. It feels weird to speculate about, you know, whether or not MBS gives a shit about whether, like, Gazans get starved. But given his, you know, opinions of starving people in the region broadly, you know, cough, cough, Yemen, I don't know, right? A lot of people speculated this is basically for domestic audiences in Saudi Arabia, that Saudi Arabia is the kind of place that could, you know, experience a lot of political turmoil, right? If the populace gets too frustrated with certain attitudes that the state has, right? And Saudi Arabia's attitude towards Israel, right, is one of those fault lines. But yeah, I mean, they have basically maintained that, you know, while they've essentially admitted, right, and Israel back, right, that they have this kind of unofficial backdoor relationship with the Israelis. They don't want to come out and say it publicly, right? They certainly don't want to sign any fucking piece of paper that says, we get along just fine with these guys. They're a normal country, right? Yeah. For whatever that's worth, coming from a country like Saudi Arabia, you know.
Well, speaking of backdoor deals, there's also another thing that Trump's trying to get a victory on this weekend. So U.S. and China are finally having high-level trade talks in Switzerland this weekend. So Treasury Secretary Scott Bessin and a trade representative, Jameson Greer, they're going to Geneva to talk with their Chinese counterparts to, you know, let's talk about these sky-high tariffs. What can we both do so that we both win?
Yeah, could both get these tariffs down. What could we both do?
Yeah.
Folks, look, they said it couldn't be done. Couldn't speak Chinese.
Yeah, just pointing the fingers like, who could have done this?
Folks,
we're all trying to catch the guy who did this, y'all.
We're all trying to find the person who did this. Ni hao. I'm over here in Shenzhen, in Shanghai, Beijing.
It's just so funny to me that they're like, hey, Donnie, why don't you sit this one out? You go golfing in Mar-a-Lago. We'll handle this.
Yeah. It would be so sick if he actually went to China and he was like, wow, there's a lot of Chinese computers here.
Where is I Show Speed? I've been looking for that guy. Baron loves him.
Yeah, Baron loves him. I Show Speed. Very fancy. I'm like looking at one of those like robot cars. Oh, fuck. I know people have joked about it. That's really what they should have done with Trump, is give him like a Trump travels the world style show on like Fox News. Oh, my God.
Could you imagine?
He would have been like, so funny, man.
He's in South Korea while BTS is dancing or Blackpink is dancing. And he's just like doing his little.
Yeah, do the fist hand bump dance. The Trump
They're doing
dance.
Extended choreography. And he comes out like, wow, Lisa, I love you on White Lotus. You're so good on that show.
He would be like a degenerate White Lotus fan.
Yeah.
Just like live tweeting the episodes and shit. Well, oh, man.
This isn't my idea, but once I read it, I was like, yeah, this is what he needed. He should have been the host of Entertainment Tonight.
Like, he would have loved that. Yes.
He went from talking about who Robert Pattinson should or should not be dating to sending people to an El Salvador prison.
Ooh, drama. I don't know. I know he's a fucking monster and we probably shouldn't be laughing about any of it, but like parts of it are, it's so fun to imagine that better world that we could have been living in if they'd have just syndicated his dumb ass.
Well,
we're cooked. Everything's cooked.
This was the fun part of the discussion. Now we got to get to the thing that hopefully is fun. So for context on to the Hassan Ethan debate and why we're talking about it, I have never, with the exception of election night, I have never seen, of this past general election, I have never watched a Hassan stream in my life, Hassan Piker, and I have never watched a H3H3 video other than like clips people have sent me. My fiance was a big fan of Ethan Klein before he apparently started losing his mind.
By the way, a thing I learned is that his fan base, I mean, I remember Ethan Klein video H3H3 videos from like a decade and a half ago, like the Vape Nation shit, which is like Obama era stuff. But I did not know until like literally a couple days ago that like a majority of his audience used to be very, very female. It was a very like, he bucked a trend, right? In like a kind of YouTube comedy shit for dudes, right? Seemingly, by crossing a kind of gender barrier and having a lot of female fans, which apparently he's, you know, lost nowadays. And I don't want this segment to be us going into, you know, a history of fucking internet drama, because I don't really care about that, and neither should you.
We might, because that's the whole crux of that. Like, I wanted you to talk about this because I don't care. I don't know if I should care, but it really affected you. You called me like really depressed the next day. You were not in a good spot. You weren't going to hurt yourself or others, but you were just like,
God.
You were just like so fucking down in the dumps. And I was like, what is going on?
So this event, right? This event happened. And again, right? Like I'm not a regular Hassan viewer. I do shit for elections and YouTube recommends me some of his videos. So like they autoplay when I'm doing dishes. Right. But I have some, and like, I feel, you know, somewhat sympathetic to Hassan. We share a lot of political views, not all for certain. But if you've been on Twitter, basically, right, in the kind of like left sphere, right, the like weird left or whatever that shit is, you've been aware for a long time because of people reposting that Ethan Klein, who used to have a podcast with Hassan, it basically used to be like me and Connor, right? And then something happened in Poland, a terrorist attack happens in Poland, and we are not friends anymore because Connor loves the disgusting of Czechs that have now invaded southern Poland. And I don't know. I'm trying to imagine something analogous, and like, there's really nothing you could even think of, right? So October 7th happens. Ethan Klein is a dual citizen, Israeli American, and Hassan is, you know, a leftist streamer and a Muslim and, you know, it's sympathetic to the plight of the Palestinians, and it causes this fucking rift, right? And if you've been on Twitter the past, I don't know, couple months, I guess, they split, but it seems like they're kind of both obsessed with each other. Maybe one side a little bit more than the other. Yeah. Maybe the Ethan side a little bit more than Hassan, as is kind of laid out in the event. Right? I don't want to call it a debate because it really wasn't a debate. This is like they finally basically got to talking to each other again, right? Publicly, which was probably not a good idea. Really for either of them, but it seemed like it was mostly to dispel the fact that they've kind of both been talking circles around each other for like a fucking month, and everybody's watching this drama, and they're, you know, they're insulting each other, right? Ethan calling Hassan you know, a terrorist sympathizer, you know, and Hassan, you know, calling Ethan a Hasbroist or like a, you know, a Zionist apologist or something like this. So you know, I'm at work, I'm doing coding, I turn the Twitch app on audio only, and I listen for the next 5 hours as these guys talk.
Five fucking hours?
Oh yeah. That's why I'm saying, like, it's not that it's not worth watching. It's actually impossible for a lot of people to watch because it's 5 fucking hours long, right? And who does anything at their job or at home where they would like to listen to two guys angrily argue at each other, and, you know, one of them constantly changing the subject and not really making political points for 5 fucking hours, right? They do it for an hour at a time listening to our podcast, Connor. Little levity, folks. So
we don't argue that much.
No, we really don't. But like, so why does this fucking matter? Why should you care at all? If I would make an argument as to why, it's that like, this is basically, especially Ethan's side, but I feel like both of them, they both form like this microcosm of where the discussion has been at in terms of like Israel, Palestine, at least online. Right. And it's important because, if you're kind of even mildly on the left, right, like left of the Democrat middle, right, to Kamala Harris or whatever, like it or not, Hassan is the biggest left-wing content creator on the internet, right? He shapes probably more people's opinions leftward or like as a constant presence than anyone else. And Ethan Klein, although he's much diminished from his kind of YouTube days of like enormous success as a kind of comedic skit guy on YouTube, still commands a pretty sizable audience and a lot of people know about him, right? And some people still listen to his podcast where he kind of rants and raves. And I would say, right, like this, you know, this event, right, this talk should be understood through that lens, right? That one of these guys, I would say more than anybody else, is a kind of lightning rod for enormous public ire when it comes to the support of Palestinians, right? And specifically criticizing Israel, right? Because I'll mention maybe later, right? Like Ethan, the other guy, right, is basically like admits as much about what's going on in Gaza. He will openly admit that Israel is committing a genocide. He'll call Benjamin Netanyahu a war criminal. He'll say that he needs to be, you know, put in jail or tried for, you know, war crimes or whatever. But he finds himself on the same spectrum as guys that are just overtly pro-Israel online. And the way that I think that happens is, you know, maybe it isn't for him personally, but for a lot of those guys, all that stuff that I just said, right? Like it's a genocide. It's very bad, right? It functions as a kind of a smokescreen, right? And you can tell that it functions as a smokescreen when all guys like that mostly do, right? They'll admit all that stuff, but then all that they do is talk about, you know, supporters of Palestinians, you know, not centering Jewish voices or, you know, denying rapes and all this kind of shit. When like October 7th happened and it was, right, like a humanitarian tragedy, but people are starving now, right? People continue to starve. October 7th is over, right? And you know, say what you will about, what Israel-Palestine was before, right? And like whether or not you can, you know, break out of Gaza and do violence unto Israelis. But at this point, you know, estimates are like 100 times as many people have died in Gaza since October 7th than died on October 7th, right? Like one of them is continual and pales in comparison to the others, everything else being equal. Right. And that's
not to even say anything about what was happening to Palestinians before
October. Of course, of course, of course. If you're just to take, right, October 7th and post, right, and say, look, this is a thing that's happening and continues to happen. And by the way, if you're American, you're fucking paying for it in some sense, right? Or at least like the political structure that represents you is actively running cover for and defending this, i.e., right, against people like the Houthis, right? That perhaps we have some collective moral culpability for this, right? And then within that context, to take and like poke holes about whether or not you're being like, you know, sensitive enough about the otherizing of Jews in America, right? It just seems not commensurate, right? If you're talking about whether or not and by the way, it like echoes the same shit that like the Trump administration's been saying, right? Like these protests at Columbia, they scare people and they piss people off and fuck you and you should go to jail, right? Like, and that's at the end of the day where you end up. And so it's useful, I guess, as an exercise, the event, right? The debate, whatever you want to call that, if just for, you know, you to be able to like clip a guy in little snippets, kind of when he breaks kayfabe and says the kind of stuff that you would suspect one of those guys thinks, right? Like screams, you know, the fucking Arabs did this, right? Like, you know, you don't give a shit about any of this. When he forgets, like, you know, people that are on his side, right? Like victims of sexual assault in Gaza, right? Like forgets their names. This is Ethan Klein, by the way, right? And like confirms all that stuff to you. So you can kind of, you know, at least you can make a plausible argument to people who are kind of on the sidelines about this stuff that, like, you know, if this guy, you know, if this guy means the things that he says about, you know, his position on like Israel Palestine and how, you know, he feels like bad things are happening and we should make things better. Well, consider the fact that he also, you know, lets loose a bunch of this stuff. Right. And to have somebody, by the way, like openly kind of be that gross in front of a bunch of people for hours at a time, I think is worthwhile. Right. As a kind of counter propaganda to the propaganda that gets done kind of every day on the internet. Right.
Yeah.
That these guys do is kind of movers and shakers of opinion. Right. But both of them, I should say. Right. Like both Hassan and Ethan Klein are propagandists of sorts. You know, I tend to be aligned with one of them and definitely not aligned with the other. Right. Yeah. So
I'll say, because one of the things we talked about is earlier today when we were doing like our pre-production work is you made the argument that, you know, Gen Z is getting, if you are a Gen Z person on the left, it is very likely that you are watching Hassan Piker for your political commentary. And a caveat I have to say here is, you know, being from Houston, Houston is not a protest city. People come here to work. They don't come here to watch the vote.
And by the way, interestingly, like Connor, you said, like, that has not been your experience, right?
Right.
Like talking to young people like in your life. Right. That is not like your perception is that like they do not know who this guy is. And like I, by the way, right, like I have a very, you know, playing magic at the local store and or interacting with, you know, my nieces and nephews is basically the most exposure that I get to anybody, you know, under the age of 30. Right. So like, I don't know what the kids are saying. I'm an old man now too. Right.
Like, yeah. The people I know that talk about Hassan and Ethan are like millennials and Gen Xers. And, okay. And my grad program where I am older than everybody, and it's a lot of Gen Z people. Hassan did get brought up one day in one of my classes, but the person who was talking about it, I'm not going to quote it word for word, but the basic gist, she was saying like, and there's this guy on the internet that's like, he's like liberal, but he's like more left than liberal. He's like further to the left than a liberal, like, okay. You know, a leftist. It's like, yeah. A leftist.
Yeah. That
and
thing.
His name is, it's like, Hashan, and like Hassan, and they're like, yeah, Hassan. Like, okay, and this person is, God, I hope they don't listen to this podcast, but they would post political content online a lot of left leaning political content, and still had no idea who Hassan was.
Okay, my barometer could be way off, bro.
Well, like, it's interesting because the New York Times just put out that article about him, how he's like the voice for Gen Z. It's like, is he? Because again, I'm in a part of the country that is not civically engaged, that is not politically active. A Houston Gen Z person is going to be wildly and radically different than a New Yorker Gen Z person. And so like I can't really compare the two. I just have to say my own lived experiences. I don't know anybody but you and like one person, one other person that like actively listens to Hassan, and you don't even actively listen to Hassan. My friend does.
I don't ever watch the Hassan stream, right? That's just not a thing.
Yeah. I don't know. This is kind of shitty, but let me get on my high horse here a little bit. I feel like it's kind of like with Hassan, I don't know, man. I just like,
go
I don't
for it, dog. It's your podcast too. Fucking blow it up.
That's true. Well, that's the thing is like, we've been talking about like, I don't really have any commentators or pundits that I listen to anymore. Like, I'll just read the article and make my own judgments from there. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll read like someone's op-ed for some like, and this didn't make sense to me. Or I'll go to Twitter to see some like historical context that was conveniently left out of a mainstream media piece. Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't listen to political podcasts anymore, except this one. And
that's pretty funny.
Yeah. I would compare it to like, you know, do you really need a quiz to tell you who you should vote for? Or can you just like have your own political opinions based on your material conditions and the things that you read? I don't know.
Right. I mean, I think it's a difference.
If you get I'll say one more thing. If you get your news from this podcast, stop.
Go on YouTube instead. No.
Literally, like we are off the cuff. We try to keep our records, not even just the episodes, the records to an hour. We're not fact checking, which means you can't sue us for libel or slander.
Nice. Got to get that one in there.
Yeah.
It showcases like how different our media consumption diets are, Connor, right? Like right. Connor is a smart guy who is in grad school. I'm an engineer, but mostly a mechanic, right? Who does enough menial labor that I listen to a lot of podcasts or like YouTubes with the screen off, right? Like YouTube videos with the screen off. Even so, like
the podcast that you're listening to, like you're a huge Radio War Nerd fan. You know about things that are going on outside of the country, which a lot of Americans can't say that they do. My favorite podcast, the one that I listen to all the time, I listened to like three episodes today. Doughboys, which
you're
is
still, you're just a huge Doughboys guy.
It's a podcast about awesome. Fast food restaurants. And I'm like, yep, this is it. I listen to Doughboys, then I go read like Jacobin and Reason magazine. Be like, which one do I like the most?
We're getting you a Harper subscription, brother. You put that lefty pinky up, dude. We're the Vanguard or some shit like that. And anyway, that's enough said, right? Like, I think that's, by the way, that's plenty of content on that. And we can definitely, and yeah, I mean, it was a big Twitter event. And
right.
Although I think you can't, it's difficult to perceive if you're not either a part of one of those communities or way, way too online in all of the worst ways. I think that both of those people have a kind of rippling out effect, right? That affects things that you might not be aware of, right? Like people, by the way, I think I saw this, right? Like there were kids that were arrested at the Columbia protests, right? Or I think it may have been it's UCLA or Berkeley, the one where they shot the kids with like fucking rubber bullets.
I think that was Berkeley.
So there were protesters, right? They're kids, right? They're in college right now. That said, basically, you know, Hassan Piker was and the stream were a reason why I got into politics, right? Which ended in them, you know, actually protesting, on a college campus to the degree that they got shot with rubber bullets by cops, yeah. Right? So in small ways and in kind of bigger ways, this stuff is part of a really much broader media ecosystem than maybe, you know, even I could say that is good, right? I mean, the fact that these are kind of the movers and shakers of public opinion in this day and age is probably not good. And I think if you ever got to talk to, you know, Hassan Piker, I think he would probably say the same, right? The fact that he's this influential is spells, you know, doom for America, right? And it's like, it's political culture. But nevertheless, right, it's they unfortunately or not, they are important.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
both sides.
We could be completely out of touch. Cause I remember just a few years ago, you and I both were complaining about our own dads respectively. Of just like, they have this one, this was during the George Floyd protest in 2020 that because they were not on Twitter, they did not see people getting shoved into right. unmarked vans.
Yeah.
And therefore they did not think that it was real. And you and I were like, I watched it clear as day. I saw
they had no idea about anything.
Right. Right.
And that is what it's been over a year. Right. So, I mean, if you're the kind of person that pays attention to something like Gaza and you've been, you know, home for Thanksgiving or whatever, it really should not be surprising given that, yeah. Given what we know about the way media is consumed, that like your parents might not know anything. Right. They might be vaguely aware of something they saw about it, right?
I will say that our media consumption, our media options have become so wildly atomized that it is pretty nice to see that, like, Hassan is rising to the top. And whether or not, you know, Gen Z really likes him, which it sounds like they do, hey,
some of them do. He's got a lot of haters, right?
Yeah. And, but, you know, he got an article published about him in the New York Times. And before mm-hmm. that, he was on CNN and Fox, and they're trying to take him down, and it ain't working.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, that's how you know you made it, right? Yeah, whenever people, what is it? I think Alex Jones did a Hassan. His name is Hassan, right? It's so good. Mm-hmm. I mean, once you get featured on Alex Jones, yeah, fuck Fox News, fuck MSNBC, fuck the New York Times. When Alex Jones is complaining about you, you know you've made it, baby.
Hassan Piker, he said he's one of us, but he's from the Young Turk.
What is this guy? Some kind of Turk? Yeah. I mean, just by the way, I mean, like, calling someone a Turk in Polish is not a nice thing to say. So, like, every time I hear the Young Turks, I'm just like, oh, I like cringe a little bit.
Is that something that your mom complains about when she goes to the gas station?
Oh, all these Turks everywhere. No. My mom is on the lib side. She tries to be very not racist.
That's right. She just thinks Russians are cockroaches.
Yeah, she wants to kill all Russians, basically. Yeah, she's not. Yeah, she's been reading a lot of like the British press. So she's not too fond of Muslims either, right? Like,
uh-oh.
Yeah, it's not great. She does not have good opinions, folks. She's not woke.
Oh, boy.
Although she is that thing, I don't know if you've seen that, like the dark woke people are saying, like the Democrats being like, you deserve everything, the cops should shoot you or whatever, right? Just like somebody's parents just going absolutely nutty, right?
Dark woke, what the fuck is this?
All right, I'm too online. Right?
No, Alec, please tell me. We have ten more minutes.
Do you remember? Nice. Do you remember? You remember the dark Brandon shit? Right, like the laser eyes Brandon, and he actually is gonna lock Trump up or like execute him or something like this. It's that, right? Like the libs who we lost Kamala and now everything is on fire, right? And they're calling up their state representative, right, and saying like we're gonna come to your office and kill you, right, or whatever, right? Wait, you didn't hear about that?
No.
Okay, so wait, that was like months ago. I can't go that far back, man, and be expected to remember any of that shit. That was when was it? Why did that happen? I think it happened during like for some of the deportation stuff. And a lot of it was when Elon was talking about Social Security cuts, when the Doge cuts were coming in, and they were kind of talking about cutting, potentially doing cuts to Social Security and Medicaid, right? A bunch of people called some congressional offices and were like, if you agree with this, we're coming to your, you know, my name is Jan Janssen, and I'm going to come to your office with a gun. It's just like, that is dark woke right there, right?
Okay. Well, I mean, that's what this country was founded on.
Yeah, you're like, that sounds fucking patriotic to me, brother.
Once upon a time... That's what you had to do to the politicians.
We all might have to cut that one.
I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm saying I disagree with it.
I'm just saying. I love that. I love that of kind of bit.
I'll say this. Obviously, I don't think that you should be able to just like shoot your representative if they're not listening to you. But I definitely think you should be allowed to say that you will shoot them.
You should be allowed to threaten them.
Yeah. I should be allowed to call any representative I want and put the fear of God into them.
Yeah, you should definitely. I mean, that's one of my biggest pet peeves right now is like all these fucking Republicans, right? I mean, I know like calling out hypocrisy is never works, right? It's not effective, but this is my fucking podcast and I'm gonna do it anyway. All these pussy ass motherfuckers that are like won't come to public meetings to get yelled at by people, right, that they're like supporting a mass deportation or whatever. Well, fuck you, man. Your shit sucks, dude. Stand on it, bitch. I thought you guys were the fucking, I'll stand up at the dinner party. I will make a scene. Thank you very much. I'm standing up for my principles. I thought that was what the Republican Party was, you fucking cucks. You guys suck, man. All this shit sucks.
Who was the guy who yelled at the was it Sean Fain?
Oh, no. The Teamsters guy?
Yeah, who was the guy who yelled at the Teamster guy?
Oh, I don't know.
Hang on a second. Guy who yelled at Teamster guy.
Wait, was it Sean Fain that punched that dude?
I don't know about that, but Mark Wayne Mullen yelled at Sean O'Brien, the Teamsters president, and was just like trying to get in a physical fight with him. It was very funny. It was very funny to see them getting under his skin. At which, by the way, Mark Wayne Mullen, a former UFC fighter, would have absolutely obliterated Sean O'Brien. So I'm glad that that didn't happen. But I wanted to bring up Mark Wayne Mullen because I just was laughing at him. Wait, am I thinking about the right thing? Fuck it, cut all this. Just thinking about these people. Because he was saying that he was like really brave, and then he photo of him not. January 6th. Anyway.
Jan 6th.
And another thing. Well, I was bringing it up. Why the fuck was I bringing up January 6th? I had a friend who said that the reason why all the people in Congress were so afraid, visibly afraid, on January 6th is he compared them to like a cheating spouse who got caught. Because it's like, because it's just like, oh shit, the people have finally risen up against us because they know, they finally realize that we've been fucking them for years.
They look out the window, they're like, oh no.
Yeah. And that was like the first time that they were like, oh, they're going to kill us.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Which is not their constitutional right.
Jesus, Connor. We are going to get in trouble. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, are we going to get in trouble? I don't know. If you have a podcast that's really small and you make a...
That's the thing. You're talking about, you know, you've made it. We haven't made it. We're still alive.
Yeah. Report us to the FBI.
Please. Okay. Hang on. Did you know that I was on the Epstein flight logs?
Oh, God, no. We're so fucked, dude. Connor Clifton is in. You're listed for what? Doing like audio contracting for Epstein?
Yeah, I helped him with his podcast.
Dude, that would be so crazy. You help produce a podcast for Jeffrey Epstein, and then like the news comes out and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, in hindsight, I never should have agreed to produce Jeffrey Epstein's Sex in the City rewatch podcast. In my defense, he had some pretty great guests lined up. Jesus. Bill Clinton, Bill Gates, Matt Groening. What's the guy's name? The 10,000 hours guy, Malcolm Gladwell.
Pinker, Steven Pinker. All those Harvard bad boys hanging out at the island. A lot of hanging out they did with Mr. Jeffrey Epstein. Don't forget, you fucks.
If your book is being sold at an airport, you were.
Yeah, for real. Actually true. Yeah, that is fucking very true now that I think about it. Holy shit.
Wasn't Noam Chomsky also in the
unfortunately, old Papa Norm. There's a couple pictures I think of him with Mr. Jeffrey Epstein. So, and I think when he's extremely old now, but when I think people would message him about it, he would like politely reply like, I really would like to put that part of my life beyond like past me. And it's like, Yeah, I don't blame you, brother.
It is really funny
dodging that one.
Once upon a time, if you emailed Noam Chomsky, he would write you back. And it's just so funny. I believe I saw the screenshot. Maybe it's fake, but I hope it's not. Where someone asked him what he thought about the Sonic movies, and his response was, I'm afraid I haven't seen them.
He rules. Just firing that one off. I mean, even if that took 2 seconds, right? Like, that's 2 seconds that he does not have.
What's that?
Although,
with Real Raw News?
Oh, Real Raw News? When are we doing a Real Raw News episode?
Well, here's the thing. According to Real Raw News...
Noam Chomsky's been dead for years.
According to Real World News, Epstein podcast producer Connor has been executed and replaced with a body double.
There you go.
After a court-martial.
At his Houston home in some time.
Real World... What is it? Real Raw News or Real World
News? Real Raw News, man. It's the best, folks. Folks, go online and type into your browser. Type in realrawnews.com. Or is it .org?
It is definitely .com. They do not have a nonprofit status.
Do you have to have a nonprofit status to have an org?
Oh, my God. Jag Hangs, former Coast Guard Commandant Linda Fagan.
Yeah, the guy, he loves Jag, by the way, for some reason. He loves those, like, the lawyers... Michael Baxter, dude, never stop.
Oh,
he's been doing this for years and years, Connor, for like almost a decade now, since the first Trump administration, for real.
Deep staters look to paint J.D. Vance as assassin who killed Pope Francis. Okay. Pope Francis was an evil bastard not to be celebrated.
Oh, by the way, who you got in the Pope betting, brother?
Filipino Pope.
You going online? You going on Polymarket? Yeah, I know. That would be too good, though.
Popopino. That's what I want.
Popopino is very nice.
We need karaoke night at the Vatican again.
That would be sick. I just want, like, I really do want, like, an evil gay, like, Italian Pope. Cardinale Todesco. Like, I'm so enraptured by, like, Cardinale Todesco. Like a cunty vaping Pope.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely, that would be fun, but it would also bring the church backwards. So,
oh yes, yeah, definitely. I mean, it would be bad for everyone involved, but it would be funny. My wife has, by the way, forbidden me from betting on the
what?
On the
really? She won't let you?
She will not. What the fuck is it called?
What, the betting
on the conclave?
The conclave.
She's forbidden me from betting on the conclave.
Damn.
I know.
Well, I'm hoping that Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle. I hope he gets it, man. I hope he wins.
That'd be cool.
First Asian Pope. Let's see. Here's a quote. In Virginia Beach, Joy Catalano, born in Manila, shared her thoughts on the potential selection of Cardinal Tagle. It's nice to know that he's Filipino, but as far as selecting a pope, I believe to me personally, if the Holy Spirit calls him to be a pope, then be it not because he's Filipino. That's right. No token popes. That's what she's thinking.
That's a real ass Catholic take, right? They're like, it would be nice. It would be really nice, but God needs to decide, right? And it's like, thank you. Very, very, very good answer.
You know what I say? You know who I think should be the pope? Pope Alec.
Donald Trump. I could be pope. Nobody said my name yet. He's not even Catholic. He's not anything. That's so funny.
He's evangelical. He's Protestant. That's the best thing about being a Protestant. You're just a catch-all.
What's your favorite book of the Bible? All of them.
All of them.
I love how I couldn't decide. Damn. All right. Well,
this episode's going off the fucking rails.
This episode is wild. This might be one of our not very good episodes. I'm feeling now that I'm cooling off on my rant, I'm feeling very, very unconfident about this episode.
Well, it's because I started talking about how, like,
oh no, that part was fine. I liked that part a lot. That part was great.
Just winding down. Bad energy. Bad day at work.
No,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah. If we don't cut this, Connor lets me in on some of the drama going on at his job, and I feel for him because I ain't got that kind of drama, bro. I ain't got it. My job rules.
It just sucks. The job rocks, and it's summer, so summer was supposed to be awesome, and then some dumb shit happened. I'm like, this is the summer of Connor. What's going on?
Yeah. This was supposed to be white boy summer. Yeah. I got to go in a wood kiln today. It was great.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. It was fun. I love fucking industrial machines. We're working on updating. Do you really want to know? Their PLCs are obsolete, and we're transferring all of it to a new PLC.
System. All right, as always, propaganda.
Cut it.